Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of our consciousness. That is why each week I look for people who are adding to the value of our spiritual awakening, and I have a very good one this weekend. This week is Naya Louise. She is she's a global networker. She's devoted her life to communication, to understanding relationships, to uplifting the human condition, and evolving the planet in the best way that she knows how. And she is still learning and she's still developing these ideas that are taking us all to the new level of understanding each other and ourselves. Thank you, Naya, for being here.
So happy to be here with you.
So I liked what we were talking about as far as relationships. You studied a lot about relationships. That's something I'm still trying to understand. And you said something about new paradigm of relationships. Mm-hmm. What do you mean? I mean, everyone's still acting out this romantic fantasy that they're going to find the ideal one. Maybe that's why I haven't found one, because it's ideal. But, you know, it seems, you know, even people who have been married are basically unhappy, you know? I mean, occasionally you meet someone's like, wow, how that happened. But what is the new paradigm of relationships that you see?
Great question. I think we're all asking ourselves that same question a lot these days. Well, I think there's just so much to that question. Mm-hmm. And there's so many areas and ways we can look at it, angles we can approach it. And at the end of the day, I really think it all begins with the self. Mm-hmm. So we are exiting or emerging from a chrysalis where I think relationships were based on security, safety, mm-hmm. and not very much about our personal evolution, not very much about our personal journey. There was a lot of sacrifice in relationship that had to be made to sort of, raise the children, you know, function in a society that works very differently than I think our DNA and our just innate awareness of self and other mm-hmm. exist.
So, yeah. So, no, that's a good place to start. So what, when you say a new paradigm, but you see, as we were talking before, this non-possessive, one-on-one, sort of this person's mine and I own them, basically. Mm-hmm. Something else you see is possible, right?
I do. And I think it again begins with the self. So mm-hmm. we're, you know how we say it takes a village to raise a child. I really think it takes a village to raise a relationship and to raise humans, you know, adults, right. You know. And I think we're slowly realizing that we've approached relationships from a very immature or juvenile dimension.
Yeah.
That whole saying, you know, you complete me, I need someone to complete me. The whole idea of someone, fixing us, completing mm-hmm. us, you know, is really, it's really outdated.
It is. So we though have relationships because we have needs.
I mean, we do.
And those needs, you're saying, don't necessarily have to complete us, but we also have human needs. So how do you talk about that in the same way?
Well, in terms of maturation, mm-hmm. there's a whole level of responsibility that I think needs to be addressed and embodied and explored and exercised within the individual before looking to meet those needs elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So there's a certain level of needs that need to be met by the self.
Yes.
Before we go out looking to find those other needs to be met by another.
And that's
maturation. That's mm-hmm. that's the idea of taking responsibility. That's the idea of doing our own personal growth, mm-hmm. our own personal work, finding our steps on the path, knowing that we're going in the direction of our dreams, the direction of our heart, before we engage in a relationship with another. Mm-hmm. If we aren't complete and feeling like we're home in our life, we're home in our hearts, we're home in our bodies, we're going to meet someone that's going to reflect that back to us.
So these things that we want other people to meet, like wanting someone to love me for the incomplete parts that I have. Is that what you're saying specifically?
So that may be why relationships aren't lasting a very long time, because you may meet somebody who in that instance is going to fill the space, the void, the part of you that needs to grow in order for you. And truly, love relationships do that for us, because when we love, our boundaries come down, we feel vulnerable and open, we're willing to reflect and be in a way with this person that we don't with probably anybody else. And so that person gets to see the parts of us that aren't, that haven't been seen. And in so doing, help us to see them. And there becomes the challenge of growth and evolving into these places. And often what happens is when we've done that work, the relationship ends. They've done what they've needed to do for us. And as we grow into a better or higher, more whole version of ourselves, they no longer reflect us. And so we move apart.
But do you believe in monogamy as a practice, or is that something that this new level doesn't believe in?
I believe in serial monogamy.
Okay.
I believe that I'm not a polyamorist. I think it's a fascinating subject. I've explored it. I've looked at it. I've read about it. I've met friends and community that are exploring it. It certainly doesn't resonate with me. But serial monogamy, yes, in terms of like going deep with someone and then completing your, essentially your contract or mission or time together, and then moving off into another monogamous relationship. I don't believe in monogamy in terms of till death do us part.
Unless you find someone, maybe that's my fantasy, of someone that you can evolve with and change with, and they're growing with you and they're walking alongside your path, but not the same path, but parallel paths, and you are just moving into the light of the unknown, into pure spirit, all that.
It's together. The ideal. It's the ideal. But and I have seen it. I have seen it. Growing up on the west coast of Canada and in quite a very open-minded, lots of healers, lots of beautiful beings, really exploring life, really. I have met some incredible couples in their elder years that are representing that. It does happen. It does happen. It takes a level of commitment, a level of holding, a level of patience, a level of real dedication to the other that I think is hard to find in our day.
Well, yeah, but it's like, what you were saying before, it reminds me, it's two sides, these relationships. You have to be available to yourself, and then you have to also be available to the other. So it's an offensive and defensive sort of practice. I mean, offensive in the sense where you're for that person, you're not judging them, you're loving them unconditionally, if you can, and you're working on yourself, you're cleaning up your unconscious actions. And if your partner, if they're conscious, will say, hey, you were unconscious when you did that, and forgive them and just point that out. And the problem comes if that person keeps doing that, right? Unconsciousness, and they don't change. And it's like, what do you do? Do you keep loving them, or do you say, well, it's time to move on? I mean, what's your advice?
So now we've entered the conversation of the new paradigm in relationship. So there are several things I wanted to speak to in that, in what you just said. And that one piece is the communication piece. We have not been taught conscious communication rituals in our culture. We just haven't. So often we use the blame game in order to express ourselves. We tend to love our partner. We let things kind of accumulate slowly over time. Certain things start to build up that we haven't expressed because we don't have the language to express it in a conscious way. And then it tends to bubble over. And suddenly it's a, you didn't put the toilet seat down. You didn't, you know, all these little things. But it's not about those things. It's about the fact that we haven't been able, and we haven't been taught, the language to express our needs as they come up without judging, without blaming, simply in addressing. So some of the work I've done in Tantra communities and conscious sensuality communities are learning new methods of communication where we don't blame. We literally address things in such a way as to diffuse them, to create more trust, love, and understanding. This is always the basis of it, to create more trust, more love, more understanding, so we can keep moving forward as these things arise, and they will arise. Life happens.
Things arise
constantly.
So the trust, understanding, and communication, you're saying, takes the shape of just addressing the issues as they arise.
So here's an example.
Yes, give me.
So something happens in your relationship, something large or small. It doesn't matter, right? If it's creating tension. And you might say something like, you did this. I'm going to give you the conscious way. I'm going to try to give you the unconscious way.
Give me the unconscious. Just say, so, you did this, so, you son of a...
So I really hated it when you, mm-hmm. know, talked to that girl over there, mm-hmm. and it made me, you know, mm-hmm. and the conscious way would be, you know, when you talk to that, you know, beautiful woman over there, I felt vulnerable.
Mm.
But what we might say is like, you like her, what's going on, what's right. happening, you know, right? Because we don't have the language to express mm-hmm. what we're really feeling. The real feeling is, I really love you. I really want trust with you. When that happened, I felt really vulnerable in that mm-hmm. trust. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, you know, right. And when it's approached that way, instead of reacting, the person would say, no, I didn't, or that's, exactly. you know, you're insecure. I would exactly. say, wow, I didn't realize I made you feel that way. I am sorry. That was not my intention.
And that's how it goes.
Yeah.
The second piece that I wanted to mention to that, to what you shared earlier was, again, back to the it takes a village to mm-hmm. raise a child. One thing I read somewhere along the way around relationship was, unfortunately in our world, because of the nuclear style of relationship that we have, we don't have the village anymore. Mm-hmm. We tend to, you know, use our partner as a friend, a beloved, a lover, almost like a parent sometimes, mm-hmm. and a therapist. Mm-hmm. And you cannot expect your partner to be all of those things for you.
Mm-hmm.
And when we sort of, you know, we think we should tell all and have, you know, but there is a certain level of thing, of you know, content in our relationship that actually is better shared with another.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, in the village concept, mm-hmm. we have the elder, we have the cousin, we have the peers, mm-hmm. we have a lot of people we can contact in order to express what's going on. We don't have that today. So today it looks like a therapist, or it looks like someone outside of your situation who may have a better mm-hmm. viewpoint to assist you.
I think we're moving back to clan cultures. All the, you know, festivals that happen on the West Coast, all the kind of collective living situations that are happening, is an essential program that's part of the human condition to live in small collective groups mm-hmm. and to share those types of jobs, in a sense, that we put on our single partner to other people. Those ways, those styles of communicating, you know. Most women have their best girlfriend they talk to mm-hmm. all the time, you know, and which is fine. This is great. This is why, you know, we are in a collective society to mm-hmm. start to explore more of ourselves. So that's part of the new paradigm.
Yeah.
Live in a community where your partner doesn't have to carry all the weight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Share your communication the best
Yeah.
loving way you know how. And
the third piece is when children come into the equation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that I've worked with in couples. And so we also think that in this nuclear paradigm that we're meant to, you know, raise the kids, do the jobs, you know, have the relationship. And we sometimes forget that, you know, all of this really is an art form.
Mm.
You know, the Cinderella syndrome, I think we spoke about that a little while ago, which is this romantic ideal, this romantic notion that if my partner loves me, they can read my mind, they know exactly what right. to do, they remember my birthday, they remember this, they pick up the kids, they ask to take the trash out. All of these things are romantic ideals and notions. Mm. They can certainly happen, but they don't happen unless we consciously create a culture or a way to make them come.
Right. The downside of that, when it doesn't happen, when your partner doesn't read your mind, it's like you get angry. Why didn't you know what I wanted?
Exactly.
And that is the romantic fantasy mm-hmm. that's been projected onto us by movies. Mm-hmm. And,
Cinderella syndrome.
Yes.
So
exactly.
that is the third piece. And that piece is recognizing and realizing like that your relationship is as valuable an evolving piece of your life as your job is. You keep keeping your, when you're working, you're evolving yourself in your work, you're bettering yourself, you're learning more, you're expanding your knowledge, your range in your mm-hmm. in your workforce to feel like you're competitive and you're growing. Why wouldn't we do that in our relationships? We
right.
kind of get stuck somewhere and we think, you know, we love each other, so, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, it does matter. It does yeah. matter. And it is an art form. It's something that needs attention, that needs care. Some of the people that I know that have really thriving relationships after children and still have a thriving sex life and feel really passionate, take time out, have weekends away from each other, have weekends away from the kids, mm-hmm. have, you know, specific date nights where they go out on a date as if they just met, you know, mm-hmm. and have ways to keep it fresh, to remember that, you know, it's an art. It's
right.
an art. It deserves time. It deserves attention. And it deserves an evolving model where we don't get stuck. We don't stop growing.
But what I've also observed, and thank you for sharing mm-hmm. all that, is the best relationships that I've noticed are the ones that are not about the relationship. Mm. The two people, the couple, they are working towards something bigger. It's not just this back and forth, why'd you do that, I did this. You know, it's like, what's our collective, what do we want to accomplish in the world as a team? Yeah. How do we put this greater vision out there? And those, like people like Alex and Alex Gray, mm-hmm. been together 40 years, and they seem to be pretty much in love still. Mm-hmm. They have a mission that's bigger than the relationship. And that's what I've noticed really drives an interaction. Mm-hmm. It could be about this, but then it gets like just about this, and then it sort of collapses because it is about this, the relationship. Where,
well,
you know,
reality,
what I'm saying?
I do, and I highly respect those visionary beings that mm-hmm. that exemplify. You have to remember also they don't have children, mm-hmm. so for a lot of people,
well, they had children, but still, they had a daughter.
Oh, my goodness, okay.
Who's a beautiful being, as far as I know.
Oh well, yeah. I can imagine. But generally, you know, those that don't have necessarily a visionary lifestyle, I think Alex and Alison Gray mm-hmm. are leaders in thought, leaders mm-hmm. in art, leaders in the visionary culture. They're incredible beings, but you know. And I celebrate all of the beings like that in mm-hmm. our world because they move us forward. Mm-hmm. But for those that really do have a more sort of everyday lifestyle, mm-hmm. their children is the glue, you know, and
is
the work and is their masterpiece. And, you know, I certainly think that that needs to be evolved as well. You know, that the mother needs to have her other passion projects.
Right.
The man also needs to have his passion projects. Sadly, I think often what happens is the children become the passion project, and then the empty nest syndrome, you know, can occur later on.
Right.
And those sorts of things that need to be addressed. I'm big on rites of passage and rituals of passage. And our indigenous ancestors, they had them for everything. From birth to death to this to that, all of these things were celebrated. Mm-hmm. They were given special, you know, place in the tribe and the clan. And we don't have that today. We don't have divorce rituals. We don't have the children leaving the nest rituals. These sorts of things need to be addressed so that people can really make future, you know, move into their lives again, continue their passion projects, like Alice and Allison and Alex Gray,
yes.
who are so passionate, who are continuously evolving and out-evolving beyond their abilities, their passions, their, you know, and it's such an inspiration.
That part really touches me. Thank you for bringing the idea of ritual back into our lives, because if you don't have that, if you put all your stuff on your kids, imagine the responsibility those children have to not even follow their own desires, but to follow what their parents mm-hmm. always wanted to be but never were. So their children live out a life that's not even their desires. I mean, it gets very confusing, and it's just perpetuated, and then it's passed on to the next generation. Mm-hmm. Boom. But if we have a society that honors ourselves, individual rites of passage, mm-hmm. then there's a healthy letting go, a healthy separation, and the love can still be there, but it's like, okay, you're out in the world. Do your vision. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to put my stuff onto you. And I think hopefully we're moving into a culture now more of a, I think if we get the idea of free energy, we don't have to be enslaved to feed ourselves the energy we need to supply our food and our arts. If we had this more of a free, open society, people could follow their dreams and develop a way of feeling and evolving their spirit.
Yeah.
This is what I see us moving into, because everyone's incarnated to bring in a greater dream,
mm-hmm.
to mm-hmm. feel more of their human potential.
Absolutely.
When we move into a world that honors that, mm-hmm. then we'll honor ourselves and the other.
Mm.
And I think this is what your work is about. I mean, I know you get intense at times and you can be fierce, as you said, but you also are so serious about wanting to bring in the next level.
Yeah.
That's what I see is so important for you. And that's very beautiful.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I often like to say, you know, thank goodness there are the early adopters of the first waivers. Thinking of Alex and Alison Gray, I certainly see them as early adopters or first waivers, bringing in these new energies amidst this really dense sort of old paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
So it was difficult to do that in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
You were really stepping outside of something. But there are, I mean, the majority is still, you know, awakening, I suppose. I think it's happening en masse today, I'm happy to say. But certainly even myself, being born in the 70s, I've always been going against the grain, you know, and I resisted that at some point, wanting to be the same as everyone else, more comfortable, I guess. But the reality is, those of us that have come with really a vision of something else and other, were deeply uncomfortable in the normal, sort of the normal way of doing things. And we are here for a reason. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's, you know, you're kind of like the light in the dark. There is this sort of, you know, how is it going to look? How is it going to feel? Where is it going to take us? You know, and it's kind of the unknown. But thankfully, more and more of us are realizing that it's time. It's time to redirect. It's time to look again. It's time to look inside. Mm-hmm. Our Western civilization has really, you know, forced us to look outside for everything. We're always having to, you know, get more money, you'll be happy. Get more of this, you'll be happy. New job, new relationship, you'll be happy. And we do that and we realize that's not it. Mm-hmm. So as we go inside, and I think that's, you know, coming back full circle, back to how can, you know, new paradigms and relationship really function, really evolve, really take us to that level that I know all of us inside our hearts. The reason we have the romantic notion is because there is a piece in us that really believes, really knows that there is a twin flame, a soul flame, you know, a connection that can be made that does sustain time, that does sustain, you know, challenges and just keeps evolving and growing, and that love can keep growing.
Well, thank you for acknowledging that. I mean, yes, it's that knowing, but not confusing it with the fantasy, you know. So there's a fine line between, do I just wait around for my twin flame to show up? Or do I engage relationships as they appear, as they come to me, and do the best that I can in each loving moment to meet that person, no matter what level of relationship, you know. We could just have met, or I could have known you for 20 years. Mm-hmm. We could have had 10 children. But can I just keep showing up as that being? Because who we are, essentially, on a soul level, is that loving being.
Absolutely.
It just gets covered over with all the junk that's thrown at us. And that's the spiritual path, you know.
It is.
How clean do we, how much centered do we stay no matter what the world is throwing at it. And that's hard.
It is. And that kind of speaks to the idea that the notion of love, as opposed to the notion of unconditional love. You know, in a lot of the romantic versions of relationship, we are in love, which it tends to come with some conditions, some attachments, and some, you know, I love you if you do this, I don't love you if you do that. That is, you know,
or when the honeymoon's over, the real person shows up because you weren't seeing that. You were projecting totally that romantic vision. And then where did that person come from?
Well, you know? From your oxytocin.
Right.
From those love chemicals, which they say last about 2.5 years, which is just enough time to meet, have a sort of a honeymoon time, make a baby, and baby's a year and a half. So safe enough to
move on to the next oxytocin. But there's something that can remain if you work through that stuff.
That's when the work begins, yeah.
Right, the work begins there. Mm-hmm. One other thing I want to talk to you about is sort of along these lines is the contact with these multidimensional aspects of ourselves and some of your experiences that I think could actually be feeding your ideas. I mean, you're of these higher realities, bringing them into this level of interaction. So how do you relate to those higher dimensional experiences, and what do you make of some of the ones you've had? I
mean, wow, big question. Yeah. Well, they certainly spoke to unconditional love. And the one that I shared with you particularly really focused and what seemed to be really directed at the divine feminine, returning, arising. And that does not mean women. That means the divine feminine within consciousness on this planet. So within men, within women, within probably even plant, animal, and mineral kingdom. Like the planet itself, the way I received the messages from these multidimensional beings was, your essence is unconditional love, and it's a love that goes beyond the physical. I mean, it's so beyond the physical, and yet it's also here in the physical. And your job, or your mission, I guess, is to anchor it into this reality as much as possible. And according to what I received, and as much as I could interpret, really, you know, this has been a very dense realm where love, unconditional love, has been difficult to find. And conditional love, attachment love, limited love has been sort of the currency of energy. So yeah, it's a lot.
Well, looking at you and seeing you, I see the effort to, I hope you don't mind me saying, move through the wounds, use that human experience as a way of reaching and merging those realms. So people just want to go there and forget about the earth plane. But in a place where someone can feel what the human dimension is like and then awaken to that, that becomes a bridge to the higher realities instead of the separation.
Absolutely.
So how do we do that? How truly, have you been doing it?
I mean, how have I been doing it? It's been quite the effort, I have to admit. It has been quite the journey. My awakening happened about 23 years ago, and I'm certainly still a student. You know, I'm still awakening to how to integrate and anchor in that unconditional love that I experienced so early in my life that changed me.
What was that awakening? The one story you told me? Was
yes.
that the awakening?
That certainly was definitely a fingerprint of God along the ley line of that awakening.
Do you want to retell that briefly if you feel comfortable?
Sure.
Because it's a beautiful story.
It is a beautiful story. Okay, so I guess 1994, Yuma, Arizona, a small regional rainbow gathering, about 1,000 people in the desert, and my first experience with that kind of consciousness and that kind of tribal culture. Today we have Burning Man, which is a huge experience of where there's supposedly, ideally, no money exchange. That was my first experience of being in a small village culture where there was no money exchange.
Yeah, I love rainbow gatherings. Yes,
it is incredible, incredible idea, incredible. Brought into like really a movement that was really trying to anchor in this new level of consciousness of being together, supporting each other emotionally, mentally, physically. All of it spiritually. And so my experience was just a beautiful night of meditation where I was really guided into a deep meditation naturally. And throughout the meditation experienced a lot of levels of myself I'd never seen or felt before. In fact, I remember the sort of, I guess it would have been like literally the splitting of the ego voice, which is often so loud and you know got the horn out you know you're not good enough this that and all and then this smaller voice that's always there that supports and nourishes and loves and inspires and knows itself on a much grander scale than the physical body and yet is always present and those voices started to separate and in fact the ego voice started to dim as this higher voice became more present and I remember it speaking to me, I suppose my higher self speaking to me, saying, you know, you are here, you are present, you are love, you are, you know, and almost telepathically, like you have enormous value in consciousness, in the realm of consciousness. And this was not said as an ego identification way of being better or less than. It was simply a fact. You are a grand energetic form within the universal construct. So it was very nourishing. And it went on for the whole evening. And as the sun was about to rise, I looked to my left and there was a ship just above me, maybe 10, 15 feet above the ground, not far off in the sky, like right there. There was about 10 people still there also witnessing this. And within moments,
okay. I found that must be the sound of the ship, right?
The ice cream ship. And then moments from there, I found myself standing up, but involuntarily, like almost like my body was being moved of its own will, and saw myself walk around the fire to this being. And this being was taller than myself, was definitely feminine in how it felt, and had these gorgeous, beautiful Chaitanya eyes, you know, those big eyes. And proceeded to speak telepathically with me, moving its arms. And as it moved its arms out like wings, my arms followed sort of involuntarily. And I felt my heart expand to the point of breaking. The amount of love that I was able to carry in my heart was incomprehensible to my being. I mean, it was going to obliterate. It was so beautiful and powerful and all-encompassing. And then those arms came back towards the heart. And as my arms followed, her arms, I went to 0 point, the state of total emptiness, total peace, total presence. And she did this for some time, really kind of expanding the range of emotion. I had never experienced anything so totally mind-blowingly powerful emotionally. And then I suppose when she decided, or as you mentioned later, this could have been a version of my higher self. I don't know. But as we came back towards center in that point of 0 point, this being proceeded to telepathically download what all I can say. I mean, I really couldn't integrate the depth of what it was. Felt like 250 to 300,000 years of Earth history, just planetary history, really quickly into my being. And it was so overwhelmingly, again, the range was so wide, way beyond my human capacity. I couldn't speak for 3 days. I couldn't actually speak. But meanwhile, I was still in this gathering. And as I kind of came out of this experience, the sun rose, the gathering sort of took life again. People, I couldn't speak and I couldn't even walk faster than possibly like one step per minute. But as I was walking, the energy within me was just so present, so alive. People would literally come up to me, lay down in front of me, and I would start doing hands-on healing on them. They would have spontaneous healings. They would go into crying, go into healing. They would, I mean, it was, and within my own being, I remember those two voices again. The ego voice had been so diminished. It wanted to kind of be like, who do you think you are? But it was so quiet. It was so dimmed down that the higher voice just kept being so present. The higher voice didn't actually do anything other than to be this total presence of love, unconditional love. And in so doing, people would come and feed me. They would, you know, take me, sit me down, and I would just accept, you know, and I was taken care of. Ask and you shall receive. I don't know, like just the presence of God was within me. So that experience really.
Could you live there? Could you stay there?
I stayed there for a certain, like, several months, and then slowly life started to sort of take over again. You know, the driving a vehicle, you know, having money exchange, you know, all of these things started to come back into the field. And
you're going
to
say something else.
I forgot to mention the one thing I actually could sort of interpret into words, during that experience with this being was you know, first of all, you are part of our star tribe. You know, you are a star being. You've accepted this mission. You're going to feel alone, but don't worry, we're with you always, even though you may not feel it or see it. Your only mission here is to anchor love, unconditional love, into the planet. That's the only reason you're here. And love is the answer to the question and the in-between. That's all there is going on here. That's all you're meant to anchor. And we'll be back for you in 20 years, which is right about now.
Oh, let's go. I think they're coming. Wow, beautiful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
For that. So, do you think you could get back to that place? Do you think when they say coming back for you, is it possible that what's emerging and being shed from your life now is actually the living, the transformational awakening where you stay at that place? Is that what they mean?
I think that is my true nature. And in fact, I think it's the true nature of all consciousness, all living things. The 23 years that I've had since then in my life's work, play of evolution, has led me to understand. And of course, you know, I think the right things come to us at the right times. I don't believe in anything. I believe in everything and nothing, you know, and I think that's kind of the exercise in sovereignty. We just spoke about sovereignty and the idea of, you know, being able to listen into it and know what is right for each one of us. We are each a fingerprint of God. So we're all going to have a perfect, unique path back to source. You know, so listen to listen to the teachers, but go to your own school, that kind of philosophy. So that's taught me that and what I've received is, you know, Gaia has been in a very dark place. There has been density on this planet for quite some time, from 26,000 to 250,000. Who knows? I don't know the exact dates, but I certainly resonate and connect to the message and the idea that the ideology that I answered a call That's what they said when they said, you're taking this mission. We love you so much. We respect so much what you're doing, but we're leaving you here. Mm-hmm. You accepted the mission mm-hmm. to stay here on earth and do this work of anchoring in light. But where am I anchoring in light into? Into a very dense mm-hmm. material realm that has been controlled by fear and pain and doubt and enslavement of the mind, of the heart, mm-hmm. Separation, all of these things. So yes, I do believe that I can go back to that unified feeling. But I think I agreed to come down here into the depths mm-hmm. in order to serve the light, and anchor it as much as I can in this place.
So how does working on yourself, you know, stuff comes up for you that, you know, are upsetting, you know, you have to deal with stuff, mm-hmm. then how does that mission of anchoring the light then work through your personality, mm-hmm. ego structure? Mm-hmm. And how do you deal with that? How do you deal with your own?
Well, it's hard.
I know it's hard.
It's yoga every day. It's breath work. It's loving yourself. It's mm-hmm. taking time out. It's learning to listen, you know, turn left, turn right, close that door, open that door, you know, oh, I need to self-care. Oh, I'm ready to act. You know, it's a constant sort of engagement with reality mm-hmm. and what's here. And trying and, you know, maybe I don't like the word trying so much, but like, mm-hmm. you know, really sourcing from that unconditional love as frequently and as possible, as much as you can. Mm-hmm. That said, some of the work that I understand in terms of channeling and in mm-hmm. terms of star being, star lineage, mm-hmm. beings willing to come down as quote unquote ground crew, you know, those who have accepted to come mm-hmm. into a body, we also were told on our way in that we would forget everything. We would mm-hmm. forget all our wisdom, all our talents, all our knowledge. And in order to actually really embed into the frequencies here, and that was the way to truly assist in the change here, because all the energies on the outside, according to what I understand, mm-hmm. this is a free will universe, those beings can't actually intervene here. Mm-hmm. But if you take form here,
then as a light being, then you have the passport to.
Then you have the passport to actually be in service, but you also forget everything. Mm-hmm. So you might, I mean, they say there's a lot of fallen angels here. There's a lot of people that came here to help and got so entangled mm-hmm. in the density, because it is dense.
It can be very, very dense, yeah. and it can be very, very light.
Well, this
and
is it. So we've done our work well. Well, it's getting lighter and lighter by the minute, mm-hmm. and the masses are now breaking through the density and the beginning stages, as I'm sure you're aware, mm-hmm. maybe, you know, in your experience, are very difficult.
Oh, yeah.
Because we break the chains, and then the light can start pouring in, and things can begin to...
Exactly. Part of it is feeling alone. Part of it is welcoming, you know, instead of saying, why me? Why am I stuck? Why is my family so different than I am?
Yeah.
Saying, okay, you're right. I'm here as something different, whatever mm-hmm. that is. Mm-hmm. And what you're saying is you use reality as your teacher for mm-hmm. the personality to start to wake up.
Mm-hmm.
It's whatever is coming to you. Oh, yeah. And wherever those dark parts of our, wherever the unconscious parts of our is another way reality is teaching mm-hmm. the personality ego to transcend to the higher levels, to deal with the issues that come, not to avoid it and meditate mm-hmm. it away and pretend yep. it doesn't happen or think the star beings are going to save us.
Yep.
That is what has given the New Age a bad name and spirituality, but the ones that use life as the vehicle for awakening.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Those are the ones that don't even claim to be spiritual. They're just mm-hmm. living, compassionate, loving the best way they can.
The best way they can. Yeah.
Making that village a happy place.
Yes.
Well, thank you. It's been very enlightening and awakening.
Likewise.
To share your life's work, in a sense, because I feel maybe you give yourself a hard time, but this is your life's work, to mm-hmm. keep at the edge of that line between love and ego,
mm-hmm.
to walk that line and to you know, be compassionate with yourself as mm-hmm. those things arise, you know?
Absolutely.
And that's what we're all here to do, is be compassionate with each other and ourselves. And as Rhonda says, we're here to walk each other home.
Yeah, mm. I love that.
Yeah. Mm. And to be sovereign. You're not going to do it for me,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and you're not going to do it for your children. It's like, if we could do it for ourselves and encourage each other mm-hmm. to be happy and joyful, to remind each other, because that's what we are then.
That's the village. That's the village.
That's the, imagine having a happy village that just was there to remind each other, hey.
Beautiful.
Thank you for your time and your mission.
Yeah. We are here. We are doing it.
Right.
One breath at a time, as I say.
So you do coaching, you do couples counseling.
I do coaching, couples counseling, nutritional therapies, meditation, cacao ceremonies.
Cacao ceremonies.
I'm really big into ritual these days and the rites of passage. I think often what I like to say is, you know, I really think the teacher-student thing has to kind of go.
Yeah.
You know, the hierarchical method of thinking. We're all teachers and students to each other at different times. Guru means to remove the darkness. Remove the darkness. So we all do that for each other. You have an inspiring conversation with a child. He's been your teacher.
Of course.
You have an inspiring conversation with an elder or they with you and you're the teacher. So, you know, really taking away the sort of demarcations between who's learning and who's teaching. And I think ceremony is an incredible way to do that. Because it's interactive and it's experiential and it's inclusive.
So how can people find you? What, do you have a website?
I do have a website.
Okay. Yeah, what
so my
is
yoga
that?
Website is called thepranasanctuaryalltogether.com.
Okay.
And then I have another website that's sort of under construction called ritualsofawakening.com, which deals more with ceremony, ritual, and that sort of, you know, building and reawakening the idea of creating moments in time to honor the changes that we're experiencing. And they're happening so quickly these days that we need quite a few of them.
Right.
And they're fun. So it takes it out of the teaching modality and into the experiential modality where it becomes a celebration, becomes an act, an event, a happening.
Right. That's why the age of the guru is over, because they're not doing it for you. We're here to do it ourselves. And making it experiential.
That's it.
Is the essence of life. That's why we're here, to have the experience of this awakening.
And I think that's why you mentioned the festival culture earlier.
Yes.
I was part of the transformational dance culture early in life, and I feel like I'm ready to return to it on some level because I think it really is coming into its own in terms of an experiential learning environment where everyone participates, everyone has a place and a voice and can be heard, can be seen, and we move out of the performance, you know, performer up there, I'm just the viewer, into this participation exercise where we all get to be sovereign and take our place.
Right, but I think even something more, something that we, maybe us, are going to create about bringing people together in a living ritual day to day, a village that is based on experiential love, moment to moment.
Let's do it.
Thank you.
You're so welcome. Thank you, Alan.
I feel you opening up here and sharing, you know, from the level of truth that you know. I feel the sincerity of that. So thank you. I've been talking to Naya Louise. And what's your website again?
The Prana Sanctuary.
The Prana Sanctuary.
And ritualsofawakening.com.
Right. PranaSanctuary.com, ritualsawakenings.com. I'm Alan Steinfeld. For New Realities, you can find me at newrealities.com or my YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/newrealities. Thank you for listening. Thank BBS Radio and everybody out there. And email me, newrealities@earthlink.net. Thanks for listening.